yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, the show Alternative Visions. Okay, today we're going to continue our talk about taxes, which we began last week. Why taxes? Why are they on the agenda? Well, they're integral, central to the post-debt ceiling government shutdown negotiations that are going on now in Congress. They're key to know where are they going? Where's Congress going with the sequester cut? You know, that $1.2 trillion that's sitting out there now beginning to have a real bite in the economy. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. We'll follow up on that. And the deficit cutting negotiations that are going on now, starting the Committee of 29 in Congress that's been set up to come up with some new proposals for cutting the budget still further. The austerity train continues. Okay, deadlines. Committee of 29, December 13th, supposed to come up with suggestions for new cuts in the budget. They, of course, will be discussing this question of the sequester cuts that are already in the budget taking effect. And the new cuts that Obama has proposed, Social Security, Medicare, et cetera. And, of course, new taxes and tax cuts for corporations that Obama has proposed. And maybe tax hikes for the rest of us. Okay, so December 13th, one deadline date to note. January 15th, the next deadline date to note, because that's where the government budget and government funding comes up again. You know, this, quote, settlement here last month in October was only to kick the can off the curb, not down the road, only a couple months here, and they're coming at it again. So they got to fund the government on January 15th. And on February 7th, they got to extend the debt ceiling again. So three dates, December 13th, January 15th, February 7th. And negotiations are going on and will intensify as we reach some of those dates. We want to keep up on that and make sure we know what's happening. And, well, where do taxes come into this mix, right? That's the important question, because they do. I had predicted there would be a deal here in last October, and of course there was. I had predicted there was going to be a fiscal cliff deal last December, and there was. And let me make another prediction here. There will be no government shutdown again on January 15th, and there will be no fight over the debt ceiling on February 7th. They're going to solve both of these without a punch-up. Okay, why? Well, first of all, because the Republicans got what they want. The Republican faction within the Republican Party, you know, in the House. They just wanted publicity here for their constituencies in anticipation of running again in the midterm elections coming up in about a year. It was grandstanding. You know, Ted Cruz and all of his friends, keep in mind that the Republicans don't really care about the negative publicity the Republican Party may give, may get, rather, because they're pretty safe in their constituencies. Last couple of decades, both houses of Congress and both political parties have gerrymandered themselves into safe constituencies. There's never more than 20 or 30 House seats that are up for grabs. So, you know, the Republicans feel pretty safe where they are, and they just want to chip away and grab a few more seats here and there and build their influence within the Republican Party. But they don't care much about what the rest of the country thinks and the impact and so forth. They're looking at their own careers here. Okay, sick. That's the first reason why. They got what they wanted. T-Publicans got what they wanted. And, you know, now they're not going to make another stink about it. Now, the Republican Party, moneybags, and old polls are also reorganizing to check the Tea Party faction's power within the party. You know, they've had recent statements and meetings. They're gathering. I think it was in Florida or South Carolina or somewhere, a strategy meeting, the old Republican polls, the establishment. And what are we going to do about these Tea Party folks? They're upsetting the apple cart here. They're actually costing our corporate friends who pay for our campaigns, costing them money with all this debt ceiling stuff. You know, we can't have that anymore. And McConnell has pretty much come out and said it. No more of this stuff. McConnell, he's the minority Republican leading figure in the Senate, and other Republicans have said that. And, of course, the T-Publicans, the faction, continue to chip away within the Republican Party, threatening to get rid of, in the primaries, get rid of the old guard, you know. And that's the major development going on within the Republican Party. So anyway, yeah, the Republican old guard is starting to fight back here a little bit. And they're even getting their corporate moneybag friends to throw in some campaign contributions where these T-Publicans are trying to upend them. So we got corporate America and the old Republican Guard closing ranks here against this T-Publican faction challenge here. Well, okay, so that's another reason. The old guard is getting its back up within the Republican Party, and they're not going to allow another such debacle, since it's costing them public opinion big time. It's interesting, isn't it? The Republicans get blamed for, inappropriately so, this debacle here last month, and now the Democrats are getting hammered over Obamacare. We're going to have some more shows on Obamacare. We had one back in July, and I had made predictions that Obamacare is going to be in deep trouble by 2016. It's going to be a skeleton of what you see because, major reason, the penalties are too small and the advantages are, in terms of health insurance cost reduction, are too minor and they are disappearing. Okay, so we'll come back to that. Anyway, the Democrats are getting hammered on the Obamacare issue, and Republicans are getting hammered on the debt ceiling and shutdown issue. So neither of them are going to want another bad rap here. Now, Obama's group and Democrats, or Timidcrats, as I sometimes like to call them, have given the Republicans a nice opening for a deal in January and February. Obama's already proposed, as I said many times, to cut Social Security and Medicare by $630 billion over the next decade. Well, it's always been a Republican proposal, but, you know, he's on record. It's in his budget, 2014 budget, to make those cuts. Also in his budget, and he said many times, is he's willing to cut corporate tax rates from the top rate of 35% down to 28%. Well, the T-Publican faction in the House has proposed 25%. Well, they're pretty darn close, aren't they, on cutting corporate taxes. And not so obvious, but just as important, they're both in principled agreement here, both Democrats and Republicans, to do something about throwing a deal at the multinational corporations to try to entice them to bring back some of the $2 trillion in corporate tax avoidance that they've been shuttling and shuffling offshore and hoarding offshore in their subsidiaries. We'll talk about that more shortly here, because we want to focus today on the corporate income tax as part of the Great American Tax Shift. Okay, we'll be back to that. But the point is, there's some nice Democrat Obama concessions already built in to the 2014 budget, and all the Republicans have to do is to say, yes, we'll claim them as our own as well. So let's watch this top corporate tax rate, and let's watch this deal for multinationals, in which they will be offered a deal even sweeter than the 28% top tax rate to entice them to bring some of that cash they've been sending to their offshore subsidiaries to avoid paying taxes in the U.S. You know, they pay no taxes virtually on their foreign earnings. Maybe 1%, 2% on average. We'll talk about that some more. Not the 35%. Nowhere near it. And no one brings them to heel over that in Congress, in neither party. They've been letting them get away with that for at least two decades. We'll talk about how they do that. Okay, but there's conditions in the budget, Obama's budget proposals, that are very appealing to Republicans. Cut corporate taxes, cut Social Security, Medicare. Right? And both parties, by the way, have also agreed to restore the sequester defense cuts this year, totaling over $50 billion. They House and the Senate, they've agreed to restore that. They haven't agreed to restore the other cuts, but they've agreed in principle, and it just takes a new piece of legislation and deal to restore the $54 billion in defense cuts. Now, there's agreement on corporate tax cuts in principle. There's an agreement on Social Security, Medicare, $630 billion in principle. There's an agreement on restoring the $54 billion defense cuts. All those are reasons why the deal will probably happen. And you got to keep in mind that the two leading characters in congressional finance committees, we have Max Baucus in the Senate, Democrat. Really, the Republican and Democrat clothing. And David Camp. Now, David Camp in the House is a Tea Republican, but he's retiring because of term limits. And Max Baucus has already announced he's retiring. So both of these guys who have a lot of influence on whether this gets to the floor of Congress to vote, really don't have anything to lose. And if they give some nice big concessions to their corporate buddies, they'll get, some nice directorships on corporations. And there will be arranged some very nice speaking fees to corporate conferences and meetings. And these guys will collect their due. That's how it works, you know, in America. They don't buy off people who are already in office. They wait until they retire and give them a nice big revolving door paycheck. You know, either speaking fees or position on boards and all of the above. Okay, they're about to be rewarded, so they're going to make sure that they pass some nice freebies to their corporate buddies before they go. Okay, all of that sort of leans in the favor of a deal coming up in January, February. It's all about how to package it, how to market it to the American people, how to make the 25-28% corporate tax cut look good as necessary, revenue neutral, in other words. How can they do some smoke and mirrors tax loophole closings to make it look like, what we did was we lowered the tax rate on corporations to 25%. But we closed all the loopholes. Look at all these loopholes we closed over here. You know, smoke and mirrors. Too complex. Loophole closings, as we'll see, are too complex for American people to really understand, at least for most. And then how do they sell the Social Security Medicare cuts to the progressive wing, the progressive caucus in the Democrat House? That's going to be a little bit of an issue here, but they'll go along. And then how do they sell the defense cuts restoration while they're cutting Social Security and Medicare? Those are the tasks. Those are the tasks, and that's really what negotiations are going to be about. How are they going to do all this? Make it look revenue neutral, you know, smoke and mirror loophole closings. How do they sell the Social Security cuts when they're restoring the defense cuts. That's what the negotiations are going to be about. Okay. All right. So, as I said, today we're going to talk about the corporate tax. That's really what we want to talk about. The corporate tax cut proposals that are already baked in to this tax code legislation, tax code overhaul, that's working its way through Congress. The last time we had a tax code overhaul was 1986, by the way, 1986. And after 1986, as we'll see, the corporate tax fell almost in half, the top tax rate, or the effective tax rate. Anyway, we will talk about that. That's coming. Every time there's a major tax code overhaul, major cuts in benefits to the wealthy and their corporations. There have been a number of important trends in tax legislation in this country. Trend one, a general shift of the tax burden has been occurring from those who earn capital incomes to those who earn wages and salaries. Capital incomes, of course, are capital gains, dividends, interest, rents, and they all emanate, much of it emanates from corporate profits. The corporation is the nexus for the rich, increase their profits and their retained earnings, the corporation, they get to pass more of it on through to their big shareholders. So if you can cut corporate taxes, there's more to pass through. But then if you really want to pass through, you've got to reduce personal income taxes for the wealthy, capital gains, dividends, interests, and rents, right? So it's like a two-sided coin game here. You got to reduce corporate profits taxes, and then you pass more of it through and let the wealthy keep more of it. And by reducing capital gains and dividends and inheritance and interest and rental tax, income tax. Okay, so keep that in mind. And there's a general shift from capital income taxation to wage income taxation, the latter mostly with the rising payroll tax over the last several decades. Now, within that general tax shift, right, or the Great American Tax Shift, as I call it, that I wrote about years ago in 2005 in my book, The War at Home. I had the Corporate Offensive from Reagan to Bush. I had a chapter on the Great American Tax Shift, showing how since 1980 this shift in various ways has been occurring, and the cost to wage earners, over 100 million families here, has been rising, while the cost to those couple million capital income households has been declining. All right, so if you're interested in that, you can look at that online at my blog, jackrasmus.com, or on my website, Keekless Production, or Amazon, whatever. Okay, so that was up to 2005. The tax code has four areas. One, the personal income tax, the corporate income tax, the payroll tax, and other minor taxes. All right, so today we're going to focus on the corporate income tax. What's been happening there, and how has it been declining? That's another trend within the trend. The general trend is, from capital incomes to wage incomes. But within that trend, in those three areas, you can look at how that general shift has been implemented on the personal income tax side, on the payroll tax side, and on the corporate income tax side. So we're going to look at corporate taxes today. And what we see is corporate income taxes have been declining dramatically in a whole number of ways, right? Both as a share, corporate income taxes as a share of total federal tax revenues has been declining. Corporate income taxes as a share of state revenue taxes has been declining. Corporate income taxes as a percentage of gross domestic product or indoor national income has been declining. And even corporate taxes as a share of corporate profits has been declining. Well, how has this decline been occurring? Well, we're going to talk about that. Okay. All right. So those are the trends. None of them are good for average folks like us, and all of them are great for earners of capital incomes and their corporations. But the corporation is the big is the nexus. It's the pass-through for all of this to occur. So we really want to focus on that. All right. If you look at legislation, tax legislation over the last several decades, what you see is this seesaw between, 1 year they really cut personal income taxes on the rich, and then they wait and they cut the corporate income tax. And they go back and forth that way. And you can cut corporate taxes, by the way, by reducing the tax rate or by creating all these loopholes. And that's another trend. They go back and forth between closing loopholes and cutting the corporate tax rate. You know, they cut the corporate tax rate, then after a while people get wise to it and they say, hey, you know, why are the corporations getting such a big deal, right? So then they raise the corporate tax rate, but they open up tax loopholes. And then people get upset and they say, hey, gee, you know, what about all these tax loopholes? This is really outrageous. They're getting away with everything. So then the legislation comes around and they close the loopholes, but they lower the tax rate, the top tax rate. And that's where we are right now. You know, Obama and others saying, well, we got too many loopholes here. We got to close the loopholes. But at the same time, Obama then said, well, I'm going to reduce the top tax rate from 35 to 28%. So that's where we are in this tax shell game that goes on, right? You give with one to the rich, you take with the other from the rich, but you always give more than you took away. So over time, they end up with more and more. Okay. That's the game. Lots of trends here, right? Lots of trends, legislative trends within the tax system in general in the U.S. And also within on the corporate side, the corporate income tax. Well, okay, so let's look at some of the data here on the corporate tax. Get out your pencil. Write this down. I will have a comprehensive article coming out in the December 1st issue of Z Magazine. That has all this data. So if you want to wait till then, just go look at that. And it will also be up on my website, Kiklos Productions, KYKLOSProductions.com, in a couple more weeks. But if you want the data right now, take out your pencil here. I'm going to give it to you to show how corporate taxes have been cut. Okay, let's look first at corporate taxes as a share of total federal tax revenues. How important has the corporate tax been in terms of contributing total federal revenues? In 1954, the corporate income tax provided 32% of all federal revenues. 1964, 21%. After the next major tax code overhaul in 1986, 12.2%. Wow, that's a nice big drop, isn't it? From 21 to 12.2% of total federal revenues, 1987. Okay, but hold your seat here. By 2009, 6.5%. Oh, we halved it again. Between 1986 and 2009, we halved it again. Well, a lot of that was because Obama gave big corporate tax cuts, business tax cuts, as part of his stimulus package. You know, that $787 billion in 2009, over $300 billion of that was tax cuts, most of that business tax cuts. Yeah, not really consumer tax cuts. Consumer tax cuts worth $120 billion were originally in the proposal, but on the recommendation of Larry Summers, his chief economic advisor at the time, in February 2009, Obama stripped out the consumer tax cuts, or a good part of them, $120 billion that the House, U.S. House had proposed. They proposed, the House proposed, you know, $950 billion And Obama agreed on the very lowest ball estimate from Larry Summers of $787 billion. He took out the consumer tax cuts. Anyway, the $300 billion or so that did get passed in Obama's first stimulus package in 2009 was mostly business, pro-business tax cuts. And that's why we have that precipitous drop in 2009 of the corporate income tax as a share of total federal revenues to only 6.5%. And it stayed low ever since. 8.8% in 2010, 7.8% in 2011, and 9.8% in 2012. Okay, well below, about 8% average over the last 4 years. Okay, that compares, you know, with an average that was at least 50% higher in the 12 to 14% range after 1986. Well, you know, you could argue, well, you know, we really needed to cut corporate taxes to help the recovery. Well, that means you believe corporate tax cuts create jobs. We're going to talk about that one because they don't. Okay, and it also means that, when corporate profits recover, then we don't have to keep the tax, corporate tax take so low. Well, we're going to see corporate profits have recovered, but the taxes still remain low. And as a result, the share of corporate taxes, the total federal revenues the last 4 years has averaged only 8%, way below the historical average and way below even the longer-run trend of reducing the corporate income tax as a major tax revenue source for the federal government. Okay. Next set of data for you to consider here. All right. A minute ago I said, you might make an argument that it's okay to cut the corporate tax when there's a crisis if you believe it creates jobs, which it does, another question. All right. But then you got to ask yourself, well, why do we keep it so low if corporate profits are returning? Get out your pencil. Here's what U.S. corporate pre-tax profits look like. In 2001, $690 billion. In 2007, $1.7 trillion. Corporate taxes grew under George W. Bush, doubled. Well, gee, more than doubled, from $690 billion to $1.7 trillion by 2007. That was the peak, you know, right before the crisis. Okay, so we get the big crash in 2008 and 9, and yes, corporate profits did decline from $1.7 trillion to $1.3 trillion in 2008, 2009, $1.4 trillion. Okay, so about $300-$400 billion fall in corporate profits during the big crash. All right, 2010 though, within a year from the end of the recession in 2009, the next year corporate profits were $1.8 trillion, again higher than they were during the boom prior to the recession. Corporate profits recovered virtually overnight within 1 year and went on to even greater record limits. Well, shouldn't we have enjoyed some sort of a corporate tax revenue increase? Now, what did they actually pay? Well, about $181 billion 1 year, $191 billion in the other year, the lowest on record of corporate tax payments. The actual payments stayed very low for 4 years, even though profits were going through the roof again. Profits last year, over $2 trillion, corporate profits, $2 trillion. Okay. But corporate tax revenues as a percent of total federal revenues still well below around 8% average, well below 10%. Okay. So this argument that, let's allow them to have some tax cuts during the bad times. Well, as soon as the good times started over again, they're still paying taxes as if it were the bad times. Yeah. How do you justify that? Now, we all know this argument that we hear from corporations and their friends and their think tanks and even their politicians that, oh, U.S. corporations pay the highest tax rate in the entire world, and we can't compete anymore because our foreign corporate competitors and countries are paying so much less than we're paying. Right? You've heard that one. And that's the whole justification, by the way, that Obama uses and the Republicans use, Baucus uses, David Camp uses to justify their cutting the corporate tax rate from current 35% to 28 or 25%. That's the main argument that they're using. Well, we're going to look at how true is that. But let's take a break first, and then we'll come back and talk about the actual official corporate tax rate versus the effective corporate tax rate, what they're really paying. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Be back in a minute.
Now, sometimes tomorrow comes soaked in treasure and blood. Had we stood the job, now we'll stand the flood.
This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. We're talking about the great corporate income tax shift here today and its connection to the upcoming negotiations, deficit and debt ceiling and so forth, and the tax code overhaul working its way through through Congress here. Okay, where we left off was I promised you some more interesting facts about this official corporate tax rate, which has been 35% since 1995, right? 35% fixed since 1995, and corporations and their apologists and pundits and all their friends and the Republican Party and half of the Democratic Party and so forth, and the press, the media says, oh, 35%, it's the highest rate in the world. You know, other countries have been lowering their corporate tax rate, except the United States, and we're paying more than anybody else. And when you factor in state and local corporate income taxes, it's even higher, you know, and they come up with all these phony figures that say, oh, poor corporations are paying, you know, almost 50%, et cetera. Not true. Not true. Okay, let me give you the facts here. Two columns, right? Official tax rate, 35% since 1995. Hasn't changed. Corporate top tax rate. What are the real effective rates? In other words, what they really pay after they take advantage of all these growing loopholes. Well, write it down. 35% 1995 official tax rate. Effective tax rate, 31%. 2001, 35%. Effective rate, 29%. 2005, 35%. Effective rate, 25%. 2009, effective 35. I mean, if official 35, effective 19. 2010, 12.6. 2011, 12.1. Oh, you see the trend here, folks? We go from 33 to 31 to 29 to 25 to 19 to 12, 6 to 12, 1. That's the effective federal tax rate that corporations are paying. One third of what the official rate is. One third, 12%, is where it's been in the last 3 years. 12% and change. Okay, well, then they say, yeah, but we're paying all this foreign taxes, and we're paying, you know, the foreign governments, too. We're getting double taxed, and then we're paying for states, corporate income tax, and so forth. Well, you know how much they're paying foreign? A couple percent more. And how much are they paying to the states? Well, the official range of corporate taxes at states, various states, it ranges between 5 and 10%. That's the official rate. What are they paying? About 2% cumulative total. In other words, they're paying 4.2% on top of their 12.1%. So that's 16% total. That's not the 35% federal, plus 8% states, 43, plus another 12-15% foreign. So they're paying well over 50%. Not true. Not true. You know, but if you read the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and all those other rags, you're going to see 35%, 39, 44, 52. So now you got the facts here. All right, so how do they actually come up with an effective tax rate at the federal level? That's about a third of the actual official tax rate. And then how do they come up with a state tax rate that's maybe one-fourth of the actual official rate? Well, there's an 80 to 100 different major tax loopholes in the U.S. tax code. I'm talking about major. There's hundreds specific to this industry or that particular company, even so forth. We're not even talking about this, but there's, you know, 80 to 100. And it's costing the U.S. government hundreds of billions of dollars every year. And it's costing the states $80 billion every year. Oh, on the corporate tax side, we're talking about somewhere between $300 and $500 billion a year in lost taxes. That's per year. You know, over a decade, what do you got? You got about $4 trillion of additional revenue. What are some of the gimmicks here? Well, one of the biggest gimmicks is if you go back to the Clinton period in 1995-96, Clinton allowed rules to go through in which multinational corporations thereafter paid almost no taxes to the U.S. on their offshore operations. Almost no taxes. They introduced what's called check-the-box rule. Check the box. In other words, on the corporate tax form, there's a box. And if they say, these profits are from a disregarded entity. That's the phrase, disregarded entity. You know, some subsidiary offshore, a disregarded entity. Oh, check the box. Don't pay any money on the profits of that disregarded entity. Now, thing is, there's another rule, look-through rule, which allows them to move their foreign profits into that disregarded entity. So move the money around. And you know, this is important. It's not just on profits made abroad. It's also on profits made in the U.S., which companies are then, because of ways they manipulate their internal pricing between their U.S. and foreign subsidiaries, they make it look like the U.S. side, you know, didn't make any money, and all the money the U.S. actually did make gets shuffled off to the foreign entity, disregarded entity. So you can actually shuffle your U.S. profits if you're got the right tax lawyers, made in the U.S., to your foreign subsidiaries, and then you dump it in a disregarded entity, and then what you do is you run it through Netherlands, so you don't pay any withholding tax. That's called the Dutch sandwich. And then you move it off to Ireland, where you pay maybe 5%. And then if you're really smart, you incorporate in Bermuda and run it all back through Bermuda, where you pay maybe 1%. All right? That's called the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. And that's a major reason why, since 1995, over the next decade, from 1995 to 2005, U.S. multinational corporations accumulated a total of about $700 billion in their offshore subsidiaries, park it out there, so they don't have to pay U.S. taxes. And it's legal. And Congress looks the other way. As I said, you know, maybe 2% on foreign tax, they pay some token thing, right? You know, what about Apple? Apple Corporation is really good at this. And they ended up just last year avoiding $9 billion in taxes that way. Google uses a double Dutch Irish sandwich and really reduced their taxes. Tech companies, banking companies, pharmaceutical companies, oil and energy companies. These are the players that really, auto companies, take advantage of this. Now, another way that you reduce corporate taxes is that you accelerate depreciation write-offs for new equipment. What's that? That says, you can take from your profits, you would have paid taxes, put it in a special fund called the depreciation fund, accelerate the write-offs for those, and you can use that money to buy new plant and equipment. And you know what? You don't have to really buy the plant and equipment in the U.S. You can do it offshore. So we're giving corporations tax cuts to move jobs offshore, and have been for decades. Right. It used to be that you'd have to 50 years to write off 1/50th every year a building that you constructed. You know, now you can do it 5 years. It used to be you had 5 to 10 years to write off equipment. Now you can do it in 1 year. All right, so that just skims off the top profits that they would have paid taxes on, and they put in this special fund called the depreciation fund, and then they spend it to move jobs offshore. Okay. Right. Another favorite tax loophole is what's called carried interest, and that is you take certain industries, financial industries, hedge funds, and so forth, private equity, and you say, oh, they're not really companies, they're individuals. And therefore, they will get taxed at the 15% capital gains rate instead of the 35%. So whole whole industries have been moved out of the corporate definition, and their taxes, even in terms of just the rate, reduced by 20% immediately, and then they put their tax lawyers to work, and they end up paying maybe 3-4%. Guys making billions of dollars, heads of hedge funds making billions of dollars, paying maybe 5%. Okay. And then there's what's called the deferred tax agreements, DTAs. This allows companies to average their corporate taxes up to 5 years front and back, so that if I pay taxes in past years and maybe this year my taxes are not as great, or maybe they're greater this year than they were in the past, I can reach back and claim some tax credits from past years and apply them to this year, and same thing going forward, you know, this net operating loss, DTAs, deferred tax agreements. I can manipulate 10 years up, 10 years back, and end up reducing my taxes or paying nothing at all. Oh, it'd be nice if we could do that. Corporations can deduct interest payments. Wouldn't it be nice if you could deduct an interest payment on your car? We used to be able to do that, by the way, in the 70s, but they ended it for us, but not for them. Okay. Companies can become real estate trusts and pay no taxes. And then there's scores of specific industry rules as well. I can't even go into them. There's so many. Well, all these are reasons why the effective tax rate is 1/3 the official tax rate for corporations. And offshore manipulation and all these other, that's just a very short list of what's going on. And then, as I said, this argument that, oh, we pay so much, they have to pay so much more for states and foreign taxes, 4.2% total there. Corporate taxes as a percent of corporate profits have also fallen. In the 1960s, corporate taxes as a share of profits averaged around, get this, 40%. They paid 40% of their profits in taxes. Right? In 1987, for example, Microsoft Corporation paid 33% of its profits in taxes that year. In 2010, it paid 10%. I can go on with all kinds of examples of this. Corporate taxes paid as a share of gross domestic product and gross national income have halved pretty much over recent decades. They're paying about half of that. corporate tax, income taxation, as it has falls, as it has fallen, has contributed significantly to growing income inequality in the U.S. Significantly. Remember, the corporation is the nexus. If it reduces its taxes, it could then pass more on to its wealthy shareholders, which it has been doing. You know, George W. Bush comes into office in 2001-03. What does he do? Immediately cuts capital gains, dividends, in other words, taxes on wealthy shareholders, cuts them dramatically, right? At the same time, in 2002, he accelerates depreciation write-offs for corporations. And then what we get in 2004 and 5 are big corporate tax cuts. And we get this deal for the corporations, the multinationals, who are holding $700 billion offshore at that time, to reduce 35% to 5.25% if they bring some of it back. Well, they brought some of it back, about $300 billion to $700 billion. They use it to buy back their stock and mergers and acquisitions, which reduced jobs. Didn't create jobs, right? A tax holiday. You know, declared, you don't have to pay anything for a year. Just bring some of it back. Well, they bring, supposed to be 5.25%. They actually paid 3.6% on that $300 million. Well, gee, you know, figure it out, folks. That was a pretty good deal. Let's do that again, and that's exactly what they're doing again. Right? There's $2 trillion offshore. Hoarded again, and they're hoarded, adding to that hoard of about $200 billion a year. Right now, it's two trillion and change, and they're playing the same game with Congress. They're saying, "Well, you know, we'll bring some of it back if you reduce our 35% to 8%," and that's what's going on, and that's what's going to be included in the tax code overhaul bill. Look, everyone says the country is broke. Let me give you some figures. What kind of a cash hoard is out there? Corporate cash hoard. I'm just talking about corporations now. I'm not talking about wealthy investors, just corporations. $2 trillion U.S. multinationals stuffed offshore. Okay? By the way, that's just an estimate of the 1,000 largest companies. Non-financial companies and financial companies. Okay? That's not my figure. That's according to the REL Consulting Group, a business group. Okay, now let's take the banks, financial companies and the banks. We got $2 trillion there, right? Okay, offshore. Another $1 trillion held as cash by the largest 1,000 non-financial companies in the U.S. So that's $3 trillion. $2 trillion offshore, another trillion, you know, on balance sheets here, cash, non-financial, not the banks, non-financial corporations in the U.S. Now let's look at the banks. They got $10.6 trillion in deposits, and the loans they've made since 2008 are at a record low of only $7.5 trillion. Oh, so they're sitting on another $3 trillion in cash. So that's $6 trillion, folks. Okay? Now, let's look at what the corporate America has done in terms of stock buybacks. In other words, passing through some of that money to its wealthy investors. Since 2009, over $1 trillion has been shuffled back to shareholders in stock buybacks. And with a projection of somewhere in excess of $400 billion occurring here this year. That's a forecast. All right. Dividend payouts. Last year alone, $282 billion in dividend payouts. Another $300 billion coming this year. You know, so that's about $8.5 billion in cash. Cash, folks, hoarded by U.S. corporations since 2009. And we gave them how much kind of tax cuts under Obama? Over $300 billion. And then Obama extended the Bush tax cuts for 2 years, you know, about another $450 billion. And then the fiscal cliff just allowed $4 trillion for the next decade. Folks, we're talking about multiple trillions of dollars flowing into corporate coffers from there into their wealthy friends and shareholders, and it's being hoarded. Well, no wonder we can't get a recovery. They're all sitting on their hoard and not investing in the U.S. Corporate profits are going up. Investment in real things in the U.S. that create jobs is going down. Oh, but investment offshore is going up. U.S. foreign direct investment offshore. Since 2008, $1.4 trillion. Some of it's going offshore. A lot of it's going to their shareholders, bondholders. And a lot of it is being diverted into financial securities investment by these corporations. Okay. Now, if you look at the state level income taxes, there's a race to the bottom going on there as well. New York Times article estimated earlier this year state corporate revenues have been reduced about $80 billion a year. Okay, $80 billion since 2009, more than $300 billion. And reduce state corporate income tax revenues, right? While the states have run a cumulative budget deficit of $580 billion in the last 4 years. So half, over half of that $581 billion state deficit picture is due to state corporate income tax reductions, a race to the bottom. States that are most egregious in this, Texas, provides $18 billion a year in such concessions. Right? Oklahoma, West Virginia, one-third of their annual state budgets equivalent is cuts in their taxes to their corporations. You know, oil and gas companies, film and entertainment, tech companies, auto companies, you know, they're all part of this. And we have across the board maybe a dozen states who are proposing to reduce further corporate taxes and eliminate them altogether in Louisiana, Kansas, and Nebraska. Okay. Now, there's a number of myths here, myths about corporate taxes. One of the myths is it creates jobs, right? Well, we already addressed that. If you look at job creation in the U.S., it's been largely stagnant for 12 years. You know, we're kind of where we were about 12 years ago, even though the population's increased by 20 million. Just doesn't, the record just does not hold that corporate tax cuts create jobs. Maybe offshore, but not here. The money goes into speculation. It's being hoarded. It goes into offshore emerging markets and so forth, but it doesn't go here. We talked about this other myth about U.S. corporations paying the highest in the world. Not true. Corporations now pay what amounts to a double tax. You know, you'll hear this one, too, saying that, hey, look, you know, corporations have to pay an income tax, and then they pass their money through to their shareholders, and they got to pay a capital gains and a dividends tax. You know, that's a double taxation. Well, look, folks, you know, every person should be taxed. And if corporations want to be considered a person, which legally they are, corporate personhood is a fact, right? Then why, as persons, they should not pay taxes too? You can't have it both ways. Huh? Okay. Tax code proposals. What's being proposed in the House? Quick summary here. Lower the top rate from 35 to 25%. Repeal the alternative minimum tax altogether, which taxes those folks with six figures. Expand the tax base. That's a code word for let's eliminate the state and local property tax deduction for folks like us, your health insurance deduction, your mortgage deduction. Lower the earned income tax credit for the poor. That's what they mean when they say broaden the tax base. They can't say outright what they really mean, so they call it broaden the tax base. They want more tax cuts for small business. They want a parity, the word is, between corporate and personal income tax top rates. So in other words, if we're going to lower the top rate for a corporate tax from 35 to 25, we should do it for the top rate for the wealthy individuals as well. Also, more R&D taxes. Let's let the multinational corporations not pay any tax at all. They call that moving to a territorial tax. And let's end the double tax. So this is all coming in Congress, folks. Watch out. More for them and less for us. Okay. We'll be talking about taxes and budgets more in subsequent weeks. Next week, who's proposing these defense cuts restorations? What's the situation with the sequester and the $500 billion defense cuts restoration? That's on topic next week. Your host, Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions.